Hey everyone, it's DJ Jazzy J, and I am here, and welcome to Tasty Time, where we will pair food with your mood here on Penguin Radio. I'm here every Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m., so tune in for the next hour while I bring you tasty and easy recipes, restaurant critiques, and much more. Every Thursday, we'll discuss things that might help the average cook do some great things in the kitchen. So, today's question of the day, and that's going to prompt you to stay to the end of this broadcast, is a fish stew which originated with Portuguese and Italian fishermen in San Francisco, California. It consists of fish and shellfish cooked with garlic, tomato, and white wine. Name this stew. So, if you don't know what it is now, I'm going to tell you the answer to that at the end of the show, so stay tuned. Also, today's random helpful tip of the day is if you want to take baking powder for freshness, or if you want to test it, you add a teaspoon to a glass of water, and if it does not fizz, the baking powder is too old and should be tossed. And that's a helpful tip from Pinterest today. So, the first recipe, the family dish, is Mama's Tacos. That's what I entitled it. So the ingredients for this was inspired by my mother, so that's why it's called Mama's Tacos. So the ingredients for this dish include tortillas, ground beef, and you can substitute ground turkey, which still tastes really good, and it's actually a little bit healthier than ground beef. You use taco seasoning, vegetable oil, tomatoes, lettuce, onions, avocados, grated cheese, hot sauce if desired also. So the way you make this is you put brown meat in a pan, and then you add the taco seasoning, and you're going to let that cook. And then you're going to get, once that's cooked, you get another pan and put vegetable oil in it. In the meantime, you grab a tortilla and put the meat inside and fold it into a taco shape. And when the oil begins to lightly bubble, you're going to place the tortilla in slowly, so one side is in the oil. And then once the first side looks golden brown, flip it to the other side. And when both sides are done, you take the taco out and you can put some cheese in it. But first you need to drain it with some tongs, and then you put, and then it's like, it, and then it's not as oily. So then you put it in like, or on a plate or whatever, lined with some paper towel. And then you're just going to add some cheese to that so the cheese can melt. So that's my Mama's taco recipe. So shout out, Mom, if you're listening. The second dish is actually, it's a magazine or cookbook recipe, and I actually took it from a cookbook that I'll be explaining a little later in the show. So this recipe is for potato gnocchi. Now, it's made obviously out of potatoes, and it kind of looks and resembles pasta, but it's not pasta, it's made out of potatoes. So potato gnocchi is another delicious and tasty and easy recipe to make pasta. I remember sitting in Aunt Carmel's kitchen watching with fascination as she easily rolled the dough into long sausage-like shapes. And then quickly finished each dumpling over the back of spiny forks. When I finally tried to make them, I realized there are no secrets here. They are quite easy to make. So the ingredients are baking potatoes, Mary's baking mix, which will make sense later in the show when I explain who the cookbook is by. So baking mix made by this woman named Mary, eggs, salt, and grated nutmeg. So, to mix it all up, in a large pan, boil potatoes with skin on until they are easily pierced with a fork, and then you're going to drain them and then peel them after they are cooked. Then you're going to put the potatoes through a food mill, or it gives a substitute. You can grate them on the larger side of a cheese grater onto a wooden board or a clean work surface, so a cutting board is fine. Then you're going to add Mary's baking mix, salt, and nutmeg. Then you're going to mix with the potatoes to form a mound with a well in the center. And in the center, you're going to break the egg. and add some salt. And then you're going to knead it, and it's going to turn into a dough. And you need to mix that until it's well incorporated. So the dough should be smooth and fairly easy to handle. If the dough is too sticky, dust your board lightly with Mary's baking mix. Only add enough Mary's baking mix to be able to handle the dough. So too much flour will make your gnocchi tough, and you don't want that. You want a nice, like, chewy pasta. But, I mean, like I said, it resembles pasta. So it's, I mean, they're going to be like chewy potato balls in a sense. So then you're going to divide your dough into four parts on Mary's baking mix dusted work surface, you're going to roll each part into a long sausage-like shape about 1.5 inches in diameter. With a knife, you're going to cut each part into individual dumplings about 1 inch each. So then you're going to set a fork face down on the end of your board and dust it with the baking mix again. And then gently roll each of your gnocchi over the back of the fork prongs. So then you're going to bring a large pot of salted water to a boil and drop in the gnocchi only a few at a time and only enough to fill the bottom of the pot in a single layer. So then the gnocchi will soon rise to the surface of the water. Then you're going to cook for an additional 2 to 3 minutes. And then you're going to remove the gnocchi with a slotted spoon to a platter. Then you can cover with your own marinara sauce or your favorite sauce and sprinkle with some Parmesan cheese if you desire. And then you'd serve immediately because you need it to be hot. So that's one of Mary's recipes for potato gnocchi. And the third one is a listener-submitted recipe by my friend. It's called S&K's Chicken Strips. So the ingredients are chicken tenders, flour, egg, panko, breadcrumbs, garlic salt, and pepper. And the way you're going to cook this is first you're going to season the chicken with the pepper and the garlic salt. And then you're going to coat the chicken tenders in flour, like just a normal. This is kind of an OG process to making things that are fried or baked. So in this case, we're going to fry it in a pan, but then you're going to dip it into the egg wash and then put it in the panko breadcrumbs. So then you get a cast iron skillet, and you're going to fill it with vegetable oil and make sure it comes up to 350 degrees. And then you're just going to cook until it's golden brown on both sides. And when it's done, you take it off, and you can put it on a lined plate with some paper towel just so the oil will kind of seep into the paper towel and it's not as oily when you eat it. And then she usually serves it with rice and then mac and cheese, just kind of store-bought if you can't make your own, and then a salad. So that's S&K's chicken strips. And it seems pretty easy to make, and I kind of want to try it myself just because I've never really made chicken strips this way. So we are actually going to take a really quick break. So this was the first segment. So when we come back, I actually have some interview questions for a lovely woman named Robin. And so you're listening to Tasty Time, pairing your food with your mood here on Penguin Radio. I'm DJ Jazzy J, and you're listening to radio.dominican.edu. So the song I'm going to play for you today is actually, it's another really good song that I love. And it's going to be a Taylor Swift song because recently, I don't know, she put out a new album like a couple months ago, but I just really like this song, so it's called I Wish You Would. So here you go.
You now, 'cause you still don't know what I never said. I wish you would come back. Wish I never hung up the phone like I did. Wish you knew that I'd never forget you as long as I live. Wish you were right here, right now. It's all good. I wish you would. It's 2 a.m. in my room. Headlights pass, the window pane. I think of you. We're a crooked love. In a straight line down, makes you wanna run and hide, but it makes you turn right back around. I wish you would come back. Wish I never hung up the phone like I did. Wish you knew that. Hear my voice in the dark. We're a crooked love in a straight line down. Makes you wanna run and hide, but it made us turn right back around. I wish you would come back. Wish I never hung up the phone like I did. I wish you knew that I'd never forget you as long as I live. And I wish you were right here, right now. It's all good. I wish you would. I wish you would come back. Wish I never hung up the phone like I did. I wish you knew that I'd never forget you as long as I live. Wish you were right here, right now. It's all good. I wish you were. I wish we could go back and remember what we were fighting for. Wish you knew that I miss you too much to be mad anymore. Wish you were right here, right now. It's all good. I wish you were. You always knew how to push my buttons. You
Alright everyone, I'm back. This is DJ Jazzy J. We're here back with more Tasty Time on radio.dominican.edu. You're listening to Penguin Radio. So we just finished up the segment on easy recipes. And just to reiterate, I had my first recipe was a family dish, and it was Mama's Tacos. The second one was a cookbook recipe called Potato Gnocchi. And the third one was one of my friend's recipes called S&K's Chicken Strips. So now I have someone here to interview, so you want to introduce yourself?
Thanks so much. This is Robin Castro.
Hi. So how's it going?
It's going well, thanks. How are you?
I'm great. Thank you so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Absolutely. So could you introduce yourself and tell everyone listening what you do on campus?
Yes, I am the staff accountant in the business services department here at the university. Been here for 5 years, got my undergraduate degree here in business, and I'm also a master's student now.
Oh, awesome. What are you in the master's for?
The business administration, global management concentration.
Nice. That's so awesome. So just to get into some cooking questions. So if you had to rate how good of a home cook you are on a scale between beginner, intermediate, good, and pro, what would you say?
You know, I'd rank myself probably around an 8. Okay. I grew up in Healdsburg, which I think is the food mecca of the world. It's a wonderful small town, but it has the best restaurants. And because I grew up there and I'm used to eating that California cuisine, mainly from the restaurants in Healdsburg, I feel like I've got a pretty good sense of how to cook a pretty good meal.
Awesome. So what is your favorite thing to cook then?
You know, I really like gnocchi, actually. I heard you reading your recipe, and I thought, oh my gosh, that's one of my favorite things to make. I love to also make braised short ribs.
Oh, that sounds delicious.
I realize that it's hot right now, and this is not exactly the most appropriate weather for such a dish, but is there really an appropriate weather for such a dish? Because it's so wonderful, you can eat it any time of the year. Aside from cooking, I think Leona might have told you, I love cheese. And cheese is always appropriate year round. So there's no cooking involved in that necessarily. It's more of an arrangement. But I do love cheese. I do love short ribs. And I do love to cook.
Awesome. Yeah. One of the reasons I picked that recipe from the cookbook is because I rate restaurants based on their gnocchi. I'm Italian like Leona. And I just, I love gnocchi. It's really good. And the funny thing is, like, not many people know it's made out of potato.
I think that's actually, I don't think anybody knows that.
Yeah.
I had one recently that, you know, of course, incorporates two of my favorite things, gnocchi and cheese, but I had a goat cheese gnocchi at a restaurant. Ooh. And they actually blended goat cheese in with the potato gnocchi. And then it had this sauce with wild mushrooms. It was just fabulous.
Wow, that's awesome. And braised short ribs.
My favorite things.
That's awesome. Yeah, and I love cheese too. I mean, I'm Italian, so I can't stray away from the kind of cheeses that we have. Yeah, so who does the cooking in your house?
I do.
You do. Did you grow up that way?
No, actually. It wasn't until very recently that I got into cooking. I've always enjoyed food, always loved it. But recently, I'd say in the last 2 years, I've gotten really, really into it. Actually, I moved 2 years ago to a property that had lots of space. And so I have my own garden for the first time ever.
Wow.
And having my own garden has allowed me the opportunity to make my own tomato sauces, to grow my own vegetables. And when you have those things and you're able to make your own food with your own homegrown veggies, it's a completely different level. And so it has really made my interest in cooking go up 1,000 notches.
That's awesome. Yeah, we've had in my family back at home, we tried to have like an herb garden and those kinds of, and vegetable garden and stuff. We did for a long time, and my grandmother, she was actually the one with the green thumb. So after she passed away, we still try to keep that alive by like dedicating our little garden to her.
Mm-hmm.
So that's, it's smart to keep a vegetable garden, and there are fresh ingredients that you know exactly what's in it and everything like that.
Exactly.
You know?
I mean, you pick it fresh and it's your, you know what's in it. You grew it yourself. There's something about growing it yourself too that's so special and significant when you cook that it just takes everything to another level. It's wonderful.
Yeah, I completely agree. So did you grow up cooking with your parents?
No, my mother was a chef and a caterer, and so was my father. So cooking runs in the family, but I think I've just never... It's not something that ever really interested me. I got started on my career relatively early when I was about 19, and I focused so much on that I didn't give myself time to focus on things like cooking, and which is such an amazing hobby and interest, but something that just never, time-wise, ever was available for me. Mm. Now it seems that it's, you know, I of course love my job here. It's wonderful, and it allows me to have an excellent work-life balance, so now I have the time to experiment with cooking and doing something that I love so much.
Absolutely. That's awesome. So what's your favorite thing about cooking?
I think kind of going back to the gardening part of it, it's creating something. So I'm an accountant, and this is important because I have this theory about accountants. We cannot be creative. It's like people who are scientists tend to be really great cooks because they're used to just experimenting, right? You just throw this in, throw that in, it tastes fantastic. But accountants, because we're all about numbers, we can't simply throw things together. I want to know exactly a quarter, is it exactly a quarter cup? How many tablespoons? How many this? How many that? So it's difficult to be creative when your mind is so focused on that. So one of the things that's been very interesting for me is experimenting and doing, trying something new that I've had to really get out of my box to do it. But that has become the favorite thing of cooking for me, is just letting go, experimenting, and making something awesome because I was able to just be creative about it.
Yeah, I think that's a really big part of cooking. And I started by making things not with numbers and numerical, all that kind of stuff. Like, I have a very different process than you do, which is just a difference in, you know, the way, you know, you think and stuff like that. And I would like to think that I'm a creative person. but I think like everyone can be. It's just a matter of, like, practice, obviously.
Absolutely.
And I just think that it's a lot more, you get a lot more freedom when you don't have to limit yourself to just the numbers.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Yeah. And that's why I'm not the best baker, because I cannot measure anything.
Now, that is exactly the opposite. Yeah. Accountants are excellent bakers because we have to follow all the numbers exactly. And in baking, you can't just experiment. You can't just throw in how much flour you feel is appropriate. You've got to follow the rules. So accountants always make excellent bakers, but not very good chefs.
Yeah, it's really funny. I was talking to someone today who she asked me about what was my like worst story in the kitchen, I guess. And the only one that I could come up with, it wasn't like a horrible, like, you know, you forgot to close the lid on a blender kind of thing. But I tried to make macaroons, French macaroons with my sister. And that's like the hardest thing to bake other than like, I don't know, creme brulee or something like that. And I just, it was so bad. Like I was making it with my sister. Shout out to my sister. But we, I don't know, I tried to mix some of the batter and take it as like part of my own. And she's a better baker than I am. And so she's like, no, you got to do it with all these kinds of measurements. And I'm like, I don't want to be like restricted to these measurements. They didn't come out. They flattened. I had to throw all of it away.
Oh, that's awful. There's nothing worse than, you know, baked with food. If you mess up and you don't get it right, you can always, you know, add more salt, add a little more pepper, and you can usually fix a dish. In baking, there's no fixing. It's a done deal when it's a done deal. So it's not followed. It can turn out quite bad.
Yeah. Well, I mean, and some people, like, because I lived in a household that I was better at cooking and my sister was better at baking, it balanced us out.
Oh, that's perfect.
So, yeah, my parents got the best of both worlds. We'd be eating nice dinners or whatever and then having a nice dessert, too. So.
Oh, that really is the best of both worlds.
Yeah. So, while cooking, has anything you've ever cooked turned out to taste bad, or it just didn't come out the way it was supposed to? Kind of like my horror story with the French macaroons.
Yes, actually. So part of my process in learning how to be creative was that first I had to follow recipes exactly the way they were. Then I took them and decided, oh, I'm going to change a few things to my liking. That's how I'm going to start being creative when I cook. And in one recipe, I decided that I was going to double the recipe, and I thought, you know, it's not salty enough. So I didn't know the rule about start adding a little bit first and just keep adding, because you can keep adding, you can't take away.
Absolutely.
And I just took the thing of sea salt and went boom and just dumped it right in there.
Oh,
and
no.
It was so salty, and it was a huge pot of soup, and I was able to fix it for the most part, but it took a lot of addition of broth and water and all kinds of things, and it was such a disappointment. It was on the right track to be a really good soup, and I ruined it by just not being patient and dumping that salt in there. So I learned from that lesson real quickly.
Yeah, but I'm sure, like, at least it was with soup and not something else that you couldn't, like, add a whole bunch of extra ingredients
totally
to, especially in baking, because I feel like if I were to screw salt up, like, the cookie would turn out so salty no one could even touch it.
Mm-hmm.
So
that's it. With baking, there's no, you have no room for any, very, very little room for creativity.
Oh, yeah. Yeah. I completely agree. Yeah. And that's not where I thrive. But that's okay. It's not for everyone. What's the best memory you can think of in the kitchen? Whether it was back when you were a child or now?
Okay. It's slightly off the topic of kind of where we're going, but it is very significant to me. When I was young, we were very poor. We were on welfare. We had very little money. And my mother was a single mother trying to raise three kids. And one of the things that we never got to eat was guacamole. And when I was a kid, my mother made the best guacamole ever. And I used to always say when I was a little girl, one day when I'm rich and famous, I'm just going to eat guacamole all day. That was my dream, and I said it for years and years and years and years. And now, as an adult, I am fortunate enough to make enough money that if I wanted to eat guacamole every day, I could.
That's
so
awesome.
When I do eat it, which is pretty often because I still love it, but when I do eat it, every time I put it in my mouth, I think about when I was a kid, how special it was to me. And I mean, it's such a small thing. It's just guacamole. It's not a big deal, but to me, it's a big deal. And every time I eat it, I am so grateful that I have the opportunity to eat it whenever I want to. So it's a very fond memory for me.
Yeah, that's awesome. And I think, like, with cooking, you know, you have so many memories like that in the kitchen, and it just makes you appreciate the food that you're eating and, like, the people you're around. And you really get to understand and, like I said, appreciate the what you have and, like, the people you're allowed to share it with.
Absolutely. And I think to that point, food is definitely something much, much more than just food that you need to survive and to give yourself energy. It is all about family. It is all about memories. It is all about having a good time. Mm-hmm. That is so crucial with food, and I think a lot of people can understand that, mm-hmm. and can feel the same way about it, but it's much more than simply feeding yourself.
I completely agree. Yeah, so what is your favorite kind of food?
Comfort food. I love macaroni and cheese. I love cheese. if you didn't already know, I love cheese. But I love comfort food. So the short ribs, that's one thing. I consider that a comfort food. Macaroni and cheese. I love fried chicken. Mm-hmm. Love that chicken strip recipe you were talking about. See, we're on the same page here. I was listening to your recipes and I thought, oh, chicken strips, that sounds amazing. But comfort food, warm food, and I do love some sweets. I'm not going to lie about it.
What kind of sweets?
Pies, cakes, donuts. I love donuts. I just can't help myself. Anything you can put whipped cream on top of. I love creme brulee, and I make a pretty good creme brulee. I love sweets, and I love comfort food. I love noodles. Did I say I like cheese? Let me throw that back in the mix again. I do love me some cheese.
So what's your favorite dessert item then, if you had to pick one?
If I had to pick one, I would probably say it would be either cheesecake or a really well-made banana cream pie. And I'm not talking about banana pudding banana cream pie. I'm talking about the Southern style with the pastry cream, lots of whipped cream, fresh bananas, really good crust. Those are definitely, it's way up there. Homemade cheesecake, one that's got like raspberries and mascarpone or something like that in it. I'd put those two on my top favorites.
Yeah. So because I know you like cheese so much, like what are the, like, let's say, top two cheeses that you like to mix together?
Mix together. Well, for cooking, there's nothing like a good cheddar and Gruyere. I think Gruyere is an excellent cooking cheese, very underrated. Mm-hmm. Macaroni and cheese, you know, crostinis, things like that. Gruyere is a really good one, and there's nothing like a really, really good cheddar cheese. For cooking, and goat cheese, too. People don't think to put goat cheese in food. It's excellent mixed in with food. I recently had, I went to a breakfast place, and their breakfast potatoes, they called them skillet potatoes, were actually mashed potatoes that were kind of flattened like a pancake, and then they grilled them on a skillet. And I thought, wow, these are so good. What is this inside there? And they had mixed goat cheese in within. It got kind of gooey and melty and gave me some inspiration for some future recipes. But I'm realizing that melted goat cheese is really good in cooking as well. So I'll go with Gruyere and goat cheese right now as my answer.
Those are two really good picks. Like I previously talked about in some of my previous shows, that one of my homemade recipes was a French onion soup with Gruyere cheese on top of the crostini.
Yes.
So that's a really good, that's a really great, and like you said, underrated cheese.
Yes, it is.
And I also had the opportunity to, if you guys are involved with like any kind of food trucks, if you've ever, you know, been to food trucks and things like that, well, they had the, I think it was the grilled cheese food truck.
Yes, yes.
And they came to my street in Long Beach, and it was parked like literally five or six doors down from my house, and I had a goat cheese grilled cheese,
and it was amazing.
It was really good.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah,
I feel like goat cheese is becoming the new cheddar right now. People are starting to replace the, you know, American cheese has always been the standard for grilled cheese.
Yeah,
but it is fading out, and not slowly at all. Most grilled cheese sandwiches don't even have it anymore. It's all about a good cheddar, goat cheeses. Fontina is a big one they're putting in.
Fontina is my favorite cheese.
It's so good. That's good to eat on its own or put in sandwiches or even in macaroni and cheese. I mean, it's gaining some popularity right now, and I like it.
Yeah, so if I had to pick two cheeses, mine would be Fontina and Havarti.
Oh!
Havarti's really good.
Havarti, I call that the dangerous cheese because it's that cheese that if you get some slices of it, you just can't put it down. You got to keep eating it because it's so creamy and delicious. Mm-hmm. You can put it in so many things, but it's really good by itself. Mm-hmm. You do not need anything with that cheese. And I can eat a lot of that cheese.
Yeah, I know. And the other one that's like, I guess like a 2.5 would be Brie. I'm obsessed with Brie.
Oh, yeah. Brie for me is it's not a cooking cheese.
No.
But I mean, you can. But Brie is actually my top favorite cheese. For just eating on its own.
I had that as a question too, because I knew how much you like cheese.
Yes, brie is definitely number one for me. Dauphinois makes the best double cream brie, I think, out there. And a lot of people would argue that it is the best, including myself, and I've had many. But brie is a very versatile cheese on a cheese plate because you can eat it with so many different things. You can put
That's
it
true.
On any cracker. You can't do that with a blue, right? A blue's got to have a specific cracker, certain toppings, certain things. A brie can be on any cracker. You can put pretty much any topping on it. You can put honey. You can put fruit spread. You can put figs, dried fruit. It goes well with everything, and it just tastes good. Mm-hmm. It's fantastic.
Yeah, I completely agree. So if you... Okay, so say you're at a party, and they have a cheese platter. Which is the one you go to first? So,
brie.
Like, the staple cheeses. You go to brie first.
Always. Always.
Always
number one.
That's me, too. Mm-hmm, because usually people don't really have Fontina or Havarti.
No.
And brie is, like, the best, like, I want to say, like, appetizer cheese.
Absolutely.
It's the best. It's so good.
Well, there's a rule. It's not really a rule, but if you're going to make a cheese plate, the rule is something old, something new, something goat, and something blue.
Yep. I've
so
heard that before.
That's why Fontina and Havarti don't often make it to cheese plates because they don't necessarily... I mean, you could call it something new, but usually in the new category, people tend to pick brie.
Yeah.
Right? In the old, people tend to choose a howdah and put something like that or another kind of hard cheese.
Yeah.
So usually... The Havarti and the Fontina get skimped out of the cheese plate, and I agree with you. They should never be. Someone needs to remake that saying and add two more to the end of it so we could get the cheeses we like in there.
Maybe you should make it. Remake the saying.
I'll have to make up a rhyme and then get back to you on
it
so you
absolutely.
Can let people know.
I'll, like, insert it into my show in just a little just for you. So is there any cheese that you don't like?
Yes. Limburger cheese is terrible. There are a lot of stinky cheeses out there, and there's something interesting about stinky cheeses that I have realized over the years, which is that a lot of the time, the stinkier the rind is, the more mild the cheese is. So the rind will put people off. They smell it and they say, oh, this is disgusting. I'm not going to eat this. But the cheese inside is very, very good. There are some exceptions to that, though. That is one. And then someone brought me some cheese from a cheese place once. I don't even know what it was. Some kind of a goat. It was wrapped in grape leaves. And I smelled it, and I thought, oh, my goodness, this might be the stinkiest cheese I've ever smelled. And I decided, well, I know the rules. Even though it stinks, it's going to taste great inside. It tasted worse than it smelled. I wish I could remember what it was called, but I think that I have selectively blocked it out of my mind because it was so traumatizing when I ate it. But, you know, it's rare that I'll come across a cheese that I don't like. And it's always the extremely stinky ones. There are some stinky ones I like, but the extremely pungent ones where the cheese remains really stinky, it's just not something
I'm
into.
That's interesting, and I didn't know that because you smell the rind, the actual cheese inside is not as bad as
yes,
it smells.
Yes, it's much more mild. I've been reading up on that because I couldn't figure out. I got this cheddar from someone as a gift, and I smelled it, and I went, oh, my gosh, this is so stinky. I just don't think I can eat this, but... Being a cheese lover, you can't just not try it. You have to try
it
so you can say you tried it and you can give your real opinion on it and, you know, you can speak intelligently about cheese. So I tried it and I thought, wow, this is like one of the best cheddars I've ever had. It has absolutely no stinky taste at all. So I did a little research on it, and it turns out that the stinkier the rind, the more mild the cheese inside is. I thought that was fascinating, but it's true. So don't be afraid
don't
to try that.
Judge cheese by its rind.
There you go. That's the that's the advice of the day right there. Never judge a cheese by its rind.
That's so funny. I love that. And that's hilarious. The two cheeses that I don't like necessarily, I mean, it depends because sometimes I'll just eat it because it comes with my order if I'm like out. But I don't really like blue cheese. I don't know why. And I've never really liked Swiss unless it's on that. It's on the French onion soup.
Interesting. Now, I've met a lot of people. Blue is one of those things that people either like it or they don't like it. So I used to fall into the category of people who don't like it. However, I have figured some things out with blue cheese. One of them is that it's got to be served with something sweet on top to cut that, you know, that very sharp blue taste. And quince paste is one of the things that just cuts that edge and makes it amazing. Also, like a fig spread is really good. But cutting that really pungent, sharp taste of the blue with something sweet always makes it much better. I've also learned that the quality of the blue cheese is extremely important. Like all cheeses, quality is important.
Yeah.
But you'll go to, if you go to Whole Foods and you look at the blue, and you get the standard Point Reyes blue, for instance, is a just kind of a standard great blue cheese. But there are other ones. They're much more pricey, but they are excellent because they're aged a little bit more, so they're not, they're much more mild. They've got the blue taste, but not that sharp, you know, cheek-stinging kind of a flavor. So selection is important, and what you serve it with is very important, but it can be a very enjoyable cheese in small amounts with the right sweet topping.
that's great. So we're going to bring it back a little bit. What is your favorite thing? What was your favorite thing to eat as a child?
Other than guacamole. And actually, cheese was a very recent thing for me. But other than guacamole, this is, you know, probably going to gross you out because it's so not gourmet, but I loved to eat tortillas with butter. It's just so, it's so good. And there was a French toast that, or not French toast, cinnamon toast that we used to make as kids. I don't know if kids still make them nowadays, but it seems to be a thing of my generation where you take that, you know, the white bread that's really cheap. It's like 99 cents for a loaf. You spread it with butter. You put white sugar and brown sugar and cinnamon, and then you put it in the broiler and you let the top get crispy. It's really fantastic. And it was that one thing as a kid I made all the time. And let me tell you, it took a little bit of creativity. There is an appropriate mix of cinnamon and sugar and butter just to get it right. So I'm going to try to claim some creativity there as a young child. But that was also back in the day when you could be 6 years old and completely unsupervised in the kitchen. Apparently that's not something that happens anymore. But I'd probably put Cinnamon Toast up there as one of my top favorites.
That's great. I think that, and like you said with the guacamole, like along, it comes along with the story. I think that's really great.
Yeah, absolutely.
So this is going to be, okay, so have you ever made your own cheese?
I did. So when I graduated from, when I got my undergraduate degree here, my office mates, knowing my deep love of cheese, bought me this amazing, fantastic, fully loaded cheese making kit. It's legitimate. I mean, it has everything. It's got rennet and cultures and all the really complicated things that you don't buy in the store. You can't get them in a regular store. So the first thing, I got really ambitious and I made my own mozzarella. It was extremely difficult. Now I know what people are talking about when they say that making mozzarella, it was very difficult, but it turned out pretty well. I wouldn't bring it to work and let everyone taste it, but it was good. Second time around, I made my own goat cheese. I strongly suggest anyone who's even thinking, who loves goat cheese, go online and get yourself the recipe. It is the easiest thing I've ever made, and it turned out so delicious.
Wow.
It takes 2 days because you've got to let it sit.
Yeah.
But all you do is basically let some stuff sit. There's no complicated task involved, and you can put whatever you want on the top, like truffle salt or lavender and honey. And it was fantastic. So, yes, I have. Those are the two that I've made so far, and I will continue to make the goat cheese.
That's awesome. So, because I've never made my own cheese ever, and I think that'd be really cool to go through that process. I mean, and I'm not trying to make cheese, but I'm trying to make ravioli with my family. Oh, that's another disaster story. It didn't really turn out the way it was supposed to. But that's a story for later. But, okay, so our final question is, if you had advice to cooks who believe that they can't cook, like just people that believe that they can't cook, what would be your one piece of advice that you'd tell them?
Take it from someone who's an accountant who could not even boil eggs. I still can't boil eggs, by the way. I always overcook them. Anybody can cook. It just takes a little bit of inspiration. There's got to be something that drives you to want to cook your own meals and make your own dishes. So my first bit of advice would be to find a recipe of something you already like. So let's say you like short ribs, but you just can't imagine making them. Get a recipe. Follow it. Decide what it is you did or did not like. Maybe you didn't like the carrots in it. Maybe you'd rather have sweet potatoes in it. And next time, you switch it out. And you gradually start doing that. If you start by following the recipe exactly as it is, and then you slowly alter it to your liking, that is the first step in creativity.
Awesome. That's great. So the takeaway from this, don't judge a cheese by its rind.
There you go. Right?
Thank you so much, Robin, for joining me today.
Thank you so much for having me.
Thank you. So we're going to actually take a quick break. I'm DJ Jazzy J. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. The song I'm going to play is dedicated to my mother because she loves this song. So, and this is kind of our song. So here you go. This is You Dropped a Bomb on Me. This is DJ Jazzy J. We are back with Tasty Time. You're listening to Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu. So we have a restaurant cookbook critique, food reviews you can use. It's a cookbook by my dad's friend, Mary Capone, and she has a cookbook called The Gluten-Free Italian Cookbook. So her products are called Bella Gluten-Free, so shout out to Mary and Tim. You guys are great. And they have several products, but her new line is called Cup to Table in Minutes. And you can buy prepackaged kind of like little cups too. And it's basically everything you need to make like Well, the ones that she showed me were like cookies or brownie mixes, and all you have to do is like assemble it in your kitchen from the little cup that you buy, and that's really cool. So she has a great product line, and it's good for people who are gluten-free or they're choosing to be on a gluten-free diet. So like I said, shout out to Mary and Tim. You guys are great. So the next segment is called Food News You Can Use, and actually this is from Natural News. It's a Natural News article. And a woman turns to raw foods and she heals herself from thyroid cancer. And I thought this was a really interesting article. She didn't want to give in to medicine or undergo surgery. So instead, she turned to a raw food diet. So it says, I decided to try an alternative, holistic approach to cure it rather than go through surgery and be on medication all my life, said Lathan. She explains that she gave herself 1 year to beat her cancer by completely changing her lifestyle. And she eliminated all processed foods and stopped her dairy intake. And instead, she juiced daily and ate only raw foods and always made sure to consume plenty of fruits and vegetables. So before her 1 year time frame, to test the effectiveness of this dietary shift, before that 1 year was even up, she says that she was declared cancer free. She said, I've always had a firm belief that the body can heal itself, crediting her new dietary lifestyle for the turnaround in her health. So a raw food diet has healed several others with a variety of health problems. And putting raw food myths to rest. So like this, I mean, people thought originally that, you know, there are a bunch of different myths surrounding raw foods. But it kind of like canceled it out with this new news story. So I thought that was really interesting. For example, one myth about those who can eat raw foods is that they only consume fruits and vegetables or enjoy one particular vegetable all day for weeks on end. And while they do eat fruits and vegetables, they're no stranger to variety, often incorporating plenty of nuts and seeds into their diet as well. So today's question of the day, like I mentioned at the beginning of this show, was a fish stew which originated with Portuguese and Italian fishermen in San Francisco, California. It consists of fish and shellfish cooked with garlic, tomato, and white wine. Name this stew. So the answer is cioppino. And I've actually made my own version of cioppino. I made it for my family and my friend, and like friends of my family. And it turned out really good. And basically, it's just good tomatoes, garlic, good white wine. You want to cook with white wine that you would drink. And just some really good seafood. So cioppino is a really great dish. And I've made it before, and it tastes really, really good. So thank you, everyone, for tuning in today to Tasty Time with me, DJ Jazzy J. I'll be here next Thursday from 4 to 5 p.m. on Penguin Radio at radio.dominican.edu.